Hello and welcome to Tyra Talks. Today is my fourth episode. It is the first one I am doing with a legal and political analysis of something that is very, very important and incredibly dangerous, and therefore I felt that it is very, very sort of pressing that I record my analysis of it for those who wish to have a balanced and legally critical understanding of what's happening in this particular case. It's to do with a British citizen called Shamima Begum. The background is that in 2014, she travelled to Syria via Istanbul to marry a Daesh fighter. It is highly likely and probable and almost proven that she was groomed online by this guy who happened to be also fighting this supposed holy war in Syria. Shamima Begum seemed to be somewhat religious, you could say. Very easily impressionable, I'd say, as well, from a Bangladeshi community in East London, where there is a huge, probably one of the largest Bangladeshi communities in the UK. And she was a schoolgirl. She was 15 years old. She somehow managed to escape the duty of care of this country, whether it be officials at the airport, or a young girl traveling by herself at the peak of the war in Syria in 2015 to Istanbul alone, is absolutely beyond me. I remember very clearly having traveled to Italy, and Istanbul actually. I traveled to Istanbul in 2015. And I remember the security being absolutely intense. I also remember when I travelled to Italy to work and to assist with the refugee crisis, that indeed it was again the same situation. There was a lot of security. There were a lot of questions being asked. There was a lot of due diligence being taking place rather, to ensure that people aren't, slipping through the net, right? So somehow we as a country failed this young girl, this young British citizen, by just sort of not giving a shit about her, essentially. This is it. So she travels there, 15 years old. She was raised by her mum. No father, so I'd say as a single mum. And the year before she travels in 2014, her mother was diagnosed with terminal, I believe it was terminal lung cancer, and she was told that she didn't have very long to live. And in months after that diagnosis, you've got this young girl who's clearly vulnerable, clearly has issues, probably grieving, probably worried, and scared, and all who knows what else. So yeah, I mean, it's really interesting that she is then. She then goes over to marry this fighter. Now, that's another point to address. Firstly, she's 15, so she's not legally allowed to get married as a British citizen. You can only here the law is that you are allowed to get married at the age of 16 with your parents' permission. And clearly that's not the case because her parents were not there. Her parents are not, permitting any of this. She also then would leave her to be married Islamically, which is not recognised in this country. Under our law, Islamic marriage is not basically regarded as marriage. In order for you to get married Islamically, you also need to be given away by your father, especially at this age, at the age of 15, 16 even. And the laws around the world, especially in a lot of countries with a Muslim majority, also have the age of 18 as the age of sort of marriage on your off of your own consent. So that's very interesting, because even in Bangladesh, where her parents are from, you can't get married under the age of 18. Illegal. So, this person has been considered to be married to somebody fighting a war in at a time where it is the climax of the war in Syria, where millions of refugees would have fled and are fleeing even to this day. And, she manages to make it through, right? And then what I find interesting is she discusses in a snippet of her talking to the Times, where she gives her interview. She basically says she sounds like she doesn't have any regrets and shows no remorse at, regarding the decisions she made to go and be with this person, and what has she done wrong. And, she doesn't sort of understand the severity of the choice she made. Which is interesting, because I would have thought culturally her family being of Bangladeshi origin would have a fundamental problem with her choice to run off and get married alone, but also marrying somebody who is not of Bangladeshi origin, which is usually a huge problem for a family. To top it off. And she didn't make contact with her family till later, till she'd gotten married. And she's also, by the way, not completed her legal education requirement in this country, so she would not have taken her GCSEs, she would not have done her A levels, she hasn't got any educational qualifications. Okay, so that's also another thing to consider. Just to sort of understand holistically what's going on in this situation. So, I suppose that's quite a good background to her story. I have to admit that a few days ago I was completely against her. I thought, oh, she has no remorse, she doesn't care, she's not ready. And I also felt that, it's why should I felt why should we taxpayers in this country pay to get you back after you chose to leave, after you made such a choice to marry somebody? And then I thought, whoa, I was 15 and very impressionable. Well, I wouldn't say I was very impressionable, but I'm sure I made some silly mistakes. I'm sure I thought about things that, I mean, she was 15, she was impressionable, probably righteousness. Somebody selling you a romantic idea of saving the world, you could say that I suppose people will have felt that way about many other freedom fighters. However, I do not agree that Daesh are for freedom fighters. They're not fighting for anyone's freedom. I think I completely condemn them. I think they are disgusting human beings, and I am waiting for the day that it's revealed how they were created, which unfortunately I don't buy the current story. So yeah, now there's another phrase being thrown around called the rule of law. For those of you who are legally trained or have understand what that means, great, but the vast majority probably don't, and I just wanted to basically have a quick sort of definition of what it means. So the rule of law is basically, that the authority and the influence of law in society, whether it's whoever it's applied by or judged by, needs to be in accordance with, sort of equality, so that everybody is equally subject to publicly disclosed legal codes and processes, so due process, and that that basically, when you uphold the rule of law, everybody under, that particular country or the country that's governed by that particular law, everybody goes through it in the same way. So it's applied to everyone generally, equally, and without prejudice and without bias. So that if I go through it, a system, so if I've committed a crime and somebody who's white has committed a crime, we should both be tried in exactly the same way, without biases on our race or sexual orientation or, class. Okay. And that because you are a British citizen, you have automatic rights that are given to you by way of being a citizen of this country. Okay. Basic things like your basic human rights, the right to a roof and food and education and healthcare and all of those things. Okay. Now, I find it very interesting how this huge issue of, I believe, what you call white feminism is very apparent, unfortunately, in this case. And I'll tell you what it means. So the left, I suppose you can say that the left, and there's like the left wing and the right wing, and they call people who are generally kinder, it seems, like Democrats or liberals or the lefties, probably branded as the kinder of the two political affiliates. A lot of people who are feminist, pro-feminists, and support those who support, anti-racist policies, are generally, usually sort of from the left. Their politics usually sway to the left, usually pro everyone, unless people think they're better, which happens a lot because we're missing something called compassion, which happens a lot. So I have one of the things that pushed me to record this episode is actually that I have spoken to quite a few politically influential people, all of whom are white, people I've worked with, campaigned with, and who are strong campaigners for the refugees in Syria, refugees from Syria, just sort of the war in Afghanistan and Iraq, the plight of people in the Middle East as a result of our government and our foreign policy. People who are generally very supportive have completely spoken out against Shamima Begum, have completely done a 360 and come out with all sorts of shit. And I was astounded today, particularly from one woman who's a single mum herself, and she basically said that, who's always helping refugees, but we have to also remember that currently this lady, Shamima Begum, is a refugee with a 1-week-old baby. And she basically said that because she's a descendant of Bangladeshi parents, that she
can become a Bangladeshi citizen and go and live there. This is what she said. And then someone else said, this is hashtag fake news. Oh, she was born in Bangladesh, which is not true. And then someone else said, it was a anti-war, anti-imperialist, anti-fascist, apparently, all of those things. He's completely convinced that she shouldn't be allowed back into this country, even though she's a British citizen. And it's like, oh, okay. And what I find particularly interesting is in this country we've had a lot of paedophile rings and sex trafficking rings and gangs where 15-year-old, 14-year-old white girls have been trafficked and lured into criminal enterprises via being groomed. They've committed crimes as a result of being groomed. They have also fallen pregnant with their groomers, believed that they were being loved. They were given money and gifts and holidays and food and you name it, in exchange for sex and some ideology that they were going to live a better life than what they were currently living. Those girls in this country have been called victims. They're victims. British citizen, white girl, our girls. But the exact same situation happening outside of the country with a 15-year-old brown-skinned girl who happens to be British, whose parents happen to have been born in another country, are also British. Somehow she needs to be going back to where she's from. They didn't say she should go back to where she's from because she's from here. But that's essentially what they're saying. Oh, her descent, country of descendant, country of descent. And I thought, how dare you? Who gives you the right to make a call? Is it because you are a white middle class woman who helps refugees so you look nice? Is this polite racism? Yes, it is. This is polite racism because if you have a fundamental problem with Daesh, which she would have because she's obviously very pro Syrian refugees and the plight of the Syrian people, especially those who are being directly affected by the Assad regime and ISIS or ISIL, Daesh, whatever you call them. But somehow the same compassion doesn't extend to a brown-skinned 15-year-old girl who wears hijab. And of course the dehumanization of Muslim women and Muslims in general in the media has allowed this to become so robotic with no compassion for her. And I essentially said, oh, well, I am very shocked that somebody like you, who supposedly helps people all the time, cannot see what's happened here. And this is a huge example, a very clear example of what white feminism is. White feminism is about whenever there's a problem with society, whenever there is an issue that affects white women, somehow it becomes it changes them to become victims. But the moment that the same issue affects a brown woman who is telling you that it's affected them, but it's affected them in a different way, it is somehow discounted. And that's a fundamental problem because completely condemn this fake, disgusting, despicable idea of righteousness that comes from somebody who's using a religion to hide behind their atrocities and luring people in with a sense of romanticism of freedom fighting, which is completely not the case. Killing their own people, killing so many innocent people around them. I cannot see how that, ever people who suffer at their hands can ever be anything other than victims. You know, women at war are often the most deeply affected, the most mistreated. Every time there's a war, you have to remember there's rape. Happens everywhere, happens all the time, it's always happened, and it will, and unfortunately, continue to happen. So that's one thing we ought to consider as well before we make you know, harsh decisions as to whether, you know, something has happened and what something that's a matter of fact and not. Now, what's happened is our government, particularly our Home Secretary, Sajid Javid, who is Asian male, Pakistani origin, this is the first proper big decision I believe he will have had to have made. This is the most media attention he will have gotten with regards to his role, which he hasn't been in for very long. He is something what we in a black and brown community would call a token. He is basically being used by a very white establishment, which is the Conservative Party, to make draconian and racist decisions, push through draconian and racist policies, and continue to uphold racist and draconian policies that were initially put forward by Theresa May, who is now our Prime Minister. He is now the brown face that's basically allowing this huge upheaval, initially perpetrated by a white racist, to continue. But what happens is people are saying, oh, well, they can't accuse him of racism when he makes these decisions because he's brown. The other thing that will happen here is he obviously feels very strongly that if he does end up making anything, a decision that shows some kind of compassion, they're going to turn around and say, oh, well, that's because he's brown, because he's got a Muslim family, and he's a sympathizer. And as a Conservative MP, he cannot be seen to be that, really. So he's sort of probably, even if he does have a compassionate bone in his body, which he might not have, but if he does, he probably cannot do this because he will be completely slated by the media. He will be completely hung up to dry by his fellow Tories, who are completely relentless when it comes to the rights of people in oppressed situations in this country. They have left this country currently on its knees with the highest rates of poverty we have seen since World War II. That is all down to our Conservative Party. So that's definitely something also to bear in mind, because, you know, we've got this person who's put his face to a decision to strip another brown young woman who is British citizen from a Bangladeshi background, to strip her of her citizenship because of a decision she made after being groomed. And, you know, one can say, is that even when a cult tries to groom you, are you actually under sort of duress, or are you, you know, making a clear-headed decision? Are you of sound mind enough to make it that decision? I mean, personally, I don't think you are. I also don't think that you are, you know, as a minor, not even allowed to make decisions and be held responsible for anything, from a credit card to taking out a phone contract to the basic things of living in this country. She was not legally allowed to do because she was a minor. That is the fact, okay? It is also fact, which I appreciate, that she did go and make a quote-unquote choice to marry somebody who is a terrorist. And that's a fact as well. Apparently, we don't know anything about him. Now, what I find sort of interesting is apparently Sajid Javid has decided that he can make this decision to strip her of her citizenship under Section 40 of the of the British Nationality Act. Actually, Section 40 doesn't give much for my reading. It's just, quite sort of vague. The Shamima Begum's family's lawyer is saying, well, actually, this is unlawful. It is, illegal move, and actually is against international humanitarian law. And yes, it is. And going back to white feminism, going back to a white savior complex, and going back to all of these people who are white middle class and highly left wing liberal and supposedly pro brown people. I mean, I don't know about that, but those very people are saying that she is allowed to, she should basically be applying for citizenship from Bangladesh, because she can claim citizenship because of her country of descent. She can claim citizenship in another country and go there, right? And I was just sort of like, and it did make me laugh, because a country like Bangladesh, which is a developing country, also known as a third world country, is incredibly poor. They have got a very, very hu they have a huge refugee crisis at the moment, particularly with the Rohingya Muslims coming, who have been coming in from Myanmar. They are not treating them very well at all. They haven't. They have got huge poverty rates. They've got, disease and famine and people dying all the time from not having access to basic clean water and hygiene. And it's one of the poorest countries in the world. It is. And there's a lot of corruption, and there's a lot of pleasing, in terms of pleasing the overlords, which is, as a pre-colonized country, Britain is the overlord. They don't want to look bad to the West, but even if they didn't want to, they don't care about people. They're not a humane place. They're not going to allow you to seek refuge there. And this person, Shamima Begum, has never been to Bangladesh. So suddenly she's to apply for citizenship of that country, who then now have turned around and said, sorry, no, she's a British citizen. She was born there. She's your problem, not ours. And why would a country that you're not born in, that you don't have citizenship to, why would that country take you on when you've been deemed a terrorist, when you've been deemed a criminal? They have absolutely no reason to. How would she survive out there? She's supposedly married to a terrorist who wouldn't be allowed to get citizenship out there. So how would it work exactly? People don't think before they make these disgusting remarks and suggestions as to how this young girl needs to be treated, who is currently a postpartum mother with a 1-week-old child in a refugee camp in Syria. And that's the reality of the situation. If this person was white, there is absolutely no way on God's green earth that she would be stripped of her citizenship, nor would she not be allowed to be back in this country. If she is to be brought back here, there's a lot of things that could assist and support national security measures, and understanding why this happened. And she could even be, advocate to stop anyone else thinking of making such a move to not do it, because she will have seen firsthand how absolutely awful it is. And even if though she's not remorseful and she's currently not saying anything about Daesh and her life there, she has no security whatsoever. She's now stateless, with absolutely nobody to vouch for her. So if she goes against the very organisation she left this country for, who have also left her, she's obviously got no way out. And whether we like it or not, human beings wish to survive. So her survival instinct is it doesn't make sense for her to come online and to appease our egos and our frail understanding of what's happened here, to basically condemn a group that she's had to be living with, because they would obviously behead her, just like what she said, that that's what she's been seeing. And that those witnessing that kind of atrocity and trauma is going to lead to post-traumatic stress disorder. And when you listen to her voice, it's got very little emotion. She sounds really sort of lost without very much giving away at all. It sounds like she's being flippant and, she doesn't have any remorse. But I'd be quite shocked if she was to undergo a medical assessment, that she would come out with anything other than some form of trauma or mental disorder after seeing all of that. Because even police officers who witness suicides, when they find a decomposing body, did have to go through serious post-traumatic stress disorder. And that's just a fact. We are human beings. We mustn't forget that. And witnessing those kinds of things does make you hard, of course, because it's a survival mechanism, it's a defense mechanism, and it's very complicated. And it's not something that, one can just make a comment about and say, oh, get rid of her and send her here and send her there. I don't believe that she deserves mercy, but I do think that there has to be a due process followed. Justice needs to be served. She has to come over. She has to come here. Even if she spends the rest of her life in prison, she has to be allowed to come here, come back home to where she is a British citizen, to back home to Britain, and taken through all the measures, and whatever needs to happen after that can happen, whether she helps educate, whether she helps assist MI6, but whatever it might be the case, that needs to be allowed to happen. I would be astounded if we somehow are able to get away, as the British government rather, get away with without an appeal, a successful appeal that this can happen. And it's a classic example of polite racism. Oh, she should rot. Yeah, let her rot. But why is it that a white terrorist gets to stay here? Why is it that white terrorists who get to plant nail bombs in and around London, who get to murder an MP, Joe Cox? How is it that those people get to stay here? Why don't they get stripped off their citizenship? Because what? Because you don't want to admit that the descendants of a lot of white people in this country may stem to Germany or the Caucasus Mountains or where would you go? Because the vast majority of people here are migrants from somewhere or another at some point. Nobody's native to here, really. I wouldn't say anyway. I think we'd have to do all sorts of tests to figure out whether people are truly, truly British, or if they're just white European from other parts of Europe. And in which case, would you then strip the citizenship? And when they make mistakes, and we've had enough of them as criminals, where would we send them? Would we send them somewhere else? I mean, it's just absolutely beyond me. Extremely dangerous move. It basically is telling people who are brown, okay, so if you make a mistake, your hands are tied, we can strip you of your citizenship. You don't know who you're messing with. Even if it's not as severe as her joining them. I mean, she was obviously not a fighter. I don't know whether it counts as joining. Did she threaten anyone? No. And perhaps that's what she meant by she hasn't done anything wrong. Perhaps she wasn't, I mean, it all depends on how she's rationalized it in her mind, which is also a very important thing to consider. Of course, I personally, my thoughts are that yes, it was wrong, but we are also doing, as the British government right now, the decision that's being made is also wrong, plain wrong, illegal, must not be allowed under any circumstances because it will endanger the rights of people who are from here. And what happens if you're fourth generation citizen, but you can still be, traced back? I know that I've got I'm a descendant of from a few different nations. Does that mean that, if heaven forbid there was any reason why my citizenship was to get revoked, what would happen? Would we do a DNA test to confirm what countries I may be from, and then like my DNA would have been made up from, and then would we then ask all those countries to, based on a DNA test, decide whether or not they'd be happy to take me in? Is that what happened? How many of you have ever made an application for visas or citizenship or anything of that nature? Do you not have to answer a question about criminal liability questions, where you have to declare, and criminal declaration questions, where you have to declare, whether or not you have committed any crimes, whether you've spent any time in prison, whether your crimes have been spent? I mean, you have to answer those questions. And currently, this person hasn't been convicted of a crime. They can convict her of a crime if they bring her here, jurisdictionally as well. It doesn't, you can't really sort of convict her of something without having a trial, having have her let allow her to stand trial. She'll have to be either extradited or brought back here somehow to have that. And let us see the full picture, because currently it's a media frenzy, and they only post very few. Media has been such a nightmare, and has done such a disservice to the Muslim community that anything they write needs to be taken with a pinch of salt, needs to be researched thoroughly and understood, the severity of what they're trying to say here. And I'm sure the international community are going to start speaking up about it, but it's such a hot topic right now that it's going to be exceptionally difficult to allow justice to happen, really, because it doesn't look like it's going to. And it's very troubling, very, very troubling, because it's showing, along with the Windrush, the Windrush scandal that we have going on at the moment, where people from the Caribbean islands who have been here for decades, but just are citizens, their papers got lost in the system, and some of them never applied for a passport, chose not to travel for whatever reason, and as a result are essentially undocumented and being put on planes and sent back to countries like Jamaica overnight, essentially kidnapped and sent, quote unquote, sent back to their country. And that's happening right now, possibly even tonight, because there are private flights that are being chartered and sent back. And in light of all of that, we're still allowing this to happen. It's like it's the continuous war on black and brown lives, and the fact that we're just not allowed to live free. We're not allowed to have the same excuses. We're not allowed to have the same compassion extended to us. And I think that's a fundamental problem, and that is in itself the greatest attack on the human rights of those who are the majority in the world. And that's just a fact, isn't it? If you look around the world and you look on the map, you'll see that the majority of the world are black or brown. And I think it's something that we cannot let happen, because if this, and it's particularly with Shamim Begum's case, where the Bangladeshi government have turned around and said, "Sorry, no, we don't, this is nothing to do with us. You deal with it." And actually, that's correct. That's the correct response. Because why should they take her on? She isn't anything to do with them. They're absolutely not. They don't have the same citizenship by birthright either. But we do. So this poor baby who's been born in a refugee camp in Syria did have, up until her citizenship was revoked, had the automatic right of British citizenship. And baby's not done anything wrong. So we've, circumvented the rights of two British citizens, not just her. And then I was also shocked to hear about this same woman who's also got children to say that, sadly, it's the mother's choice, and as a result, the mistakes the mother's made, well, tough luck on the child. Well, no, we don't say that to mothers who are making mistakes in this country, though, do we? No, we take them into care and we put them in foster care until mummy's okay again. That's what happens here. But again, a brown face with a hijab, doesn't seem to deserve any sympathy whatsoever. And I think that's we are living in a very troubling times, and it's just something that we need to consider fully, holistically. Please read up on, what it means, what the legal, the act that's being used, what it actually says, because it doesn't say anywhere that that's going to be okay. Whether or not politically it's the correct move, I don't think so. Policymakers also need to consider whether this is the right move. I don't think so. And people can suck it up, whether they agree or they have some kind of moral or legal or non-legal or whatever compass they have to make such a decision about a British citizen is completely wrong. Absolutely wrong. You're not legally trained, you're not politically trained, you have opinions, you've read a few articles, good on you. Lovely to hear people politically active when they don't understand anything, but please, please understand what this is saying. I think I have to commend the lawyer who is working on her case, because he's actually been very very clear in how it's not compliant with international humanitarian law, how it's not compliant with the law that we have to allow British citizens their rights. So it's sort of spreads into so many different, avenues. And the fact that she's a refugee now, that's also another point that we haven't addressed. She is a British citizen who is a refugee in another country, And essentially, what could she do? She could go undocumented and try to cross the ocean. I mean, she could, but because her face is all over the place, she doesn't even have the option to do that. So essentially, she's stuck until she dies. That can't be right. So I hope that that's been helpful. I hope that this allows you to sort of think about things in a holistic manner and really see this particular case for what it is, which is racism. Polite racism sometimes, but just plain racism on this particular occasion. I hope you've enjoyed it. Any questions or comments about this particular episode, I'd be happy to take. And please tune in for my next episode, which will be recorded in a couple of days. Enjoy the rest of your day. I hope you've learned something. Thank you very much for listening.